Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Next Level. I'm JVL, here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Happy after Election Day. Tim, why are you waving your hands at me? Is this a stop? Are you calling time out?
I'm saying hey to all my friends. I'm running on fumes. You know, I've just been spending all this time together with the Oath Keepers and Steve Bannon and the freaks in Arizona, and I'm just happy to be here with all of you. I'm drinking from their tears, and you know, so I'm just waving in jubilation. And I'm going to mispronounce a lot of words.
Okay. We're recording on Wednesday, November 9th in the morning. We, all three of us, are coming off of just a couple hours of sleep, staying up late watching election returns. Sarah, do you want to give us a quick rundown of the state of play?
Yeah. So basically, really good, solid night over performance for democracy.
Democracy overperformed.
USA.
I just want to say at the jump, I think we will get into some of the particulars of our analysis, but I would say in aggregate, if you've been listening to us, you got a pretty good sense of, unlike a lot of the sort of cable news chat, I think we were on a bunch of this stuff. Thought Evers could pull it out, and he did in Wisconsin. That's a very important swing state. It will be contested, going forward. It looks like Ron Johnson's probably going to pull it out, but like more narrowly than we thought. And then Whitmer just crushed in Michigan in doing so also brought along Jocelyn Benson, the Secretary of State, thereby just totally destroying both Tudor Dixon and this insane person, Christina Caramo. Tudor Dixon herself is insane, but comparing her to Christina Caramo, she's actually totally normal because Christina Caramo is like a QAnon crazy person. So we got
and
Michigan.
A full trifecta, both the state legislature and the Senate.
Yeah,
in Michigan.
Full That's control. Right. Michigan That's now, right. blue state.
And in Wisconsin, still have a veto power, which means so you still, you know, the Republicans don't take that completely over. And then in Pennsylvania, as we very much expected, Mastriano goes down in flames, and JVL's boy Fetterman pulls it out for the only flip we have right now, right? So then there's like a bunch of outstanding stuff, but Fetterman pulls it out. Oz, who we can get into this, but like really people thought the momentum was with him. Those negatives that were really high, they were high. And then, so right now we're really waiting on Arizona and Nevada, but Arizona, and Tim's going to tell us all about Arizona. In fact, I won't even go into Arizona. I'll just say that because we can talk those through, but I would say Arizona is looking better than expected in many ways. And Nevada, people are bullish on Nevada. The Dems on the ground are bullish on Nevada, even though I'm looking at it kind of can't make quite heads or tails of it because it has a lot to do with like what's in the mail ballots that have to come in over like the next 5 days. But I would say that's kind of the map. The big disappointment, heartbreaker for me is that that my boy Tim Ryan didn't even come close. But, you know, Ohio's out of reach. I think that's what we can take from this, even if you run a really great race, great campaign. But the rest of the map, and I mean, just watching right now, so like I am on a couple hours sleep, but I am feeling giddy at the prospect of Kevin McCarthy, who I stayed up till four, but at two, he came out and gave like an alternate universe speech in which he acted like everything was good. We are just dominating. I'm like, bro, you might pick up 8 seats. Like you might have a like 7-seat majority.
Or less.
Maybe. Or less. And like, you and Marjorie Taylor Greene are going to be best friends, and I wish you all the horrible things that come with that.
And Sarah, you left out maybe the fifth or sixth most important thing, which is that as we are going to tape, Lauren Boebert's in an awful lot of trouble.
I was going to get into Lauren Boebert in my
Lauren
review.
Lauren Boebert might get pushed out into Madison Cawthorn world. So, Tim, go ahead. Talk
I want to take you to Lauren Boebert. I want to do, I'm going to go big picture, just the biggest picture, and then I'm going to address the many Bullard commentators who have sent me recriminations over my predictions, which actually weren't as bad as some of them made it seem. But, you know, okay, well, I want to get into that.
Bullard commentators? Who did this?
Bullard Ted Johnson. Commenters.
I thought you were like Ted Johnson and Will Saladin are sending you mean emails.
No. The commenters have had some sternly worded emails for me, but which I appreciate the feedback. Okay, here's the biggest picture, which I just don't want to lose, is that we are now in the fourth cycle where there is a trend of center-left, pro-democracy, normie, Democratic voters kind of controlling the majority of the country. Okay, now there have been some disappointments throughout all that, but if you go back to the 2020 primary, I wrote, and I just kind of re-upped this for an article that'll be out by the time this podcast is up, just about how I should have listened to March 2020 of myself. But in March 2020, I wrote about Joe Biden's silent majority, which is, you know, basically suburban moms and dads, older voters of color, people who are not very online, people who don't want to be part of a cult, people who are sick of the crazy shit. Okay. In 2020, they put Joe Biden over Bernie and Warren. In 2020, they obviously gave Joe Biden 81 million votes and helped carry Georgia and Arizona. Those voters turned out in the 2022 Democratic primaries. Has been a JVL thing, like against what Fox and all these guys say about the crazy lefties. No, actually, the normie won in almost all the Democratic primaries in 2022. And now here we are in the general election where the same thing is happening. And I think that we just cannot like look away from that trend amidst all the craziness, all the scary stuff, all the doom casting. Like the middle is holding in that regard. And they are mostly, you know, voting for the Democrat with few exceptions. They voted for Brian Kemp today in Georgia. You know, they voted for Mike DeWine in Ohio, right? Like mostly though, they're voting for the Democrat. And so I think that's an important takeaway. Are what now on the actual races, what I missed. So last week's podcast and on my Snapchat show, so it's all out there, I thought that the Republicans would take about 20 seats and 52 Senate seats. Okay. And as we sit here today, like we just have to appreciate a little bit of luck. Like it wasn't that far off from that, right? And I got a great, and I wish I should have grabbed this guy's name. I'm going to send you a note afterwards because I forget who it was. My inbox is a dumpster fire. But somebody pointed out to me on last week's show, I talked about how there are four coin flips basically in the Senate. And how I thought it'd be 52 because I was like, I don't think that all four will go Republican. I did not consider that all four might go Democrat. So I split the baby. And this person said, you know, actually, that's not math. your words, man. And these aren't coin flips, right? Like they're related, right? Like these things happen together. And in 2016, Donald Trump won basically four coin flips, you know, in these very small, narrow states that he won. And that might just very well happen here, where these all move together. It's narrow Democratic majorities. This is true also in some House races where Democrats are going to win narrowly. And you know, the luck kind of landed on the democracy side this time, thank goodness, in addition to other stuff that's happening. We'll talk about abortion. We'll talk about all the other stuff. But, like, you know, this Georgia race is very close. I think that the Senate race in Arizona is going to get close. We can go deeper into my Arizona experience. Nevada is a true literal coin flip right now. Not literal, but a true coin flip. And so I think that is basically what happens. We have to appreciate, you know, that luck was on our side on that front. In addition to kind of this sort of moment, you know, the silent voter that I'm talking about. Boebert, and the last thing is, we've been on this. Bill Kristol has been on this. Bill Kristol, by the way, if you just listen to Bill Kristol, or even to Sarah was dogging cable news earlier. If you just listen to the median MSNBC pundit / Bill Kristol, you would have been better prepared for what happened last night than if you were analyzing the Real Clear Politics average. Much better prepared, okay? So Bill was on this, but he introduced me to Adam Frisch, who is running against Boebert. And then Adam is a prime example of this silent majority thing that I'm talking about. The Colorado 3 had always elected moderate people before Boebert. It's a Republican district, but it had always been kind of moderate Republicans, and there was a moderate Democrat in there for a minute. And Boebert is a lunatic, okay? And I think that all of, you know, you kind of worry that, like, okay, maybe these people just want lunacy. And Frisch ran this campaign that's just like, I'm just a business guy, okay? Don't worry about me, right? I've got Republicans that like me. It was a very Sarah Longwell-friendly campaign. Like, I'm not scary. I'm not going to be, you know, putting litter boxes in the classroom and, like, doing Nancy Pelosi's bidding. Don't worry about it. He worked his ass off, went across the district, and enough people are just like, you know what? Yeah, this seems fine. I don't need this fucking lunacy in my life anymore. And that was, I think, just a big trend really everywhere except for DeSantis.
Do you think Frisch is going to win?
And so, again, this will now air later. We'll have more info. But based on my conversations with him and with other people in Colorado, he seems likely to win a narrow victory. Like last night when we were talking, they were thinking maybe recount territory hundreds, and then some more stuff is coming overnight. And now they're thinking he could win by a couple thousand votes.
And where, I mean, the Republicans still do have a path to 51 Senate, right? I mean, if they flip Nevada and Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And even to 52, if Walker beats Warnock, right, in a runoff.
Yeah. I mean, conceivably, the Democrats could get to the exact prediction that we had, Republicans.
This is what I want to, everything seems great right now, but there's
the luck could flip. That coin could flip right back the other way, with the series of things. I do think the Arizona, let me just do a quick Arizona thing really quick, just so folks understand where we stand. So I wrote about this. I've been with all these lunatics. We do, just the Schadenfreude alert. There were some sad Republicans last night. Daryl always talks about the room of the sad normie Republicans that she had to be in. I was with the MAGAs.
Tell me everything.
Nigel Farage is there. Bannon is there. Benny Johnson is there. I mean, Jack Pizzagate Jack is there.
Did you bring tears home with you? And can we have a ceremonial drinking?
If Mark Fincham is roaming through the crowd, like multiple Newsmax and OAN celebrities, it was just the beating heart of the lunatic. It was Bannon's war room come to life in a location. Plus, with some rich donors and a handful of other Republicans at this election night party. There's Kelly Ward, Chemtrail Kelly, it was packed. It was really hard to get into. People are drinking, and up until about 10 o'clock, people are very excited. They're all putting their eggs in the Florida to Arizona basket. Benny Johnson is doing his campy like shtick at the on the MC. They're playing their gay '80s music that they play for some reason at all these events, and people were into it. And by about 9:30 or 10 o'clock, I mean Hobbs goes up 18 in the early vote. So I'm going to talk about that, like what this means, and the people in there, they might be talking a big game, but like they thought it was going south. Many of them were a handful of them that wanted to talk to me. Some of the craziest ones like talking to me, I think, because they're like trolling me or whatever. They were thinking it was going south because Lake was doing worse than Biden was on the early and on the mail vote. And so Lake comes out at 10. And gives just a lunatic, exactly what you would think she would do. Don't let them steal this from us, blah, blah, blah. And she's down 18. She's speaking at 10 o'clock, down 18. and even the people in the room that I'm standing next to are kind of like, this is weird. Like, we're losing by a lot. I mean, there are a handful of people next to me who are like, fraud, kill them. But then, like, there are another handful of people next to me that are like, why is she talking now? We're losing. This is not the normal state of affairs. People who had been to other election parties, not the new MAGA types, are like, this is not how things normally work. After she spoke, got really sad and empty in there. But what happened later in the night is we kind of end up in Arizona with an inverse of the red mirage. And there's a blue mirage happening there. And despite the fact that Hobbs was outperforming Biden's early vote and mail vote number, the inverse happened, like where the election day vote, Lake is outperforming Trump. And so, as we're sitting here, it's 9 here. It'll be Wednesday night when we get another big batch from Maricopa. Some of the stuff that's out is like the late mail, which is like I did a mail, but I ended up dropping it off, right? Like that's the latest stuff to happen. And that ended up being kind of surprisingly good for Biden, if you remember, in 2020. So that is what the Hobbs folks are banking on, is that like the late mail won't look like, the other election day stuff. So I, when I talk to the Hobbs people, they think they were winning narrowly. The Lake people think that they're going to win by you know, five or whatever, but they're, you know, delusional. And so I think that, that
like five.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they literally told me this morning. We think we won by five. I guess there's enough votes out that we don't really know. I mean, she narrowed the gap from 18 to three in like two dumps, you know? So I don't want to completely mock that possibility. And so that is really what it comes down to. If Lake does end up winning by five and the most bullish Lake assessments are true, that probably brings Masters across. I don't think Fincham's running 7 points behind her, but it might bring Masters across, and or we're in recount territory with Masters then.
So you think Masters has a real chance? Because that's the...
I think a very outside chance. And it looks bad. The most smart person that I've talked to, who's been the most right this whole time, feels like Lake is going to win and Masters is going to come up short. But like that said, everyone's kind of just putting their finger in the wind because you just don't, you know, because we don't really know. It's not like the old days where, you know, you're like, how many precincts are left? And we can go look at the precincts and say, is that a good precinct for me or a bad precinct? Like, we don't know what the precincts are. Maricopa is one big county, and we don't know how many ballots are in these boxes that people dropped off, right? And so it's like Or how many mules. Yeah exactly. So there's a little bit of the tabulators, what's happening with the tabulators. So there's a little bit of a known unknown there in Arizona. So.
Boy, it's all very exciting. I still think it could go south. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, I just think we should spend just 2 seconds on Fincham and the fact that Fincham is somehow managing to run behind both Lake and Kelly, which if your frame, as mine has been this whole time, is like governors and secretaries of state are the number one thing that matters here for democracy and sort of certification going forward, like a lot of bright spots on this. Because like I think it would be terrible if Lake wins, but if she has a Democratic secretary of state who's actually like presiding over elections, like it just changes the dynamic to like two outright election deniers working together. And it's just a good check on the system. And so I'm really thrilled about it.
And I think actually, Sarah, not only that, you deserve credit for your work on this, and it's a sweep. Lake would be the only exception to the sweep. It is Michaels, Dixon, Mastriano, and then a bunch of other ones that were never going to win, but those three. And then Kemp, you have to mention Kemp in there, right? On the governor's things, right?
That's right. So, and Raffensperger, yeah. Who ran ahead of Kemp.
Yeah, right. And so that was the governor's. And then I was going to the secretary of states with Raffensperger, Karamo, you know, Crockett, New Mexico, people were worried about Pennsylvania picked by the governor. Marchant still out in Nevada, right? So, so conceivably, you know, there are one or two downsides, but a near sweep on like the core election denial candidates. And I do think this overlaps. I don't want to ignore abortion. I think there's an overlapping election denial, abortion extremism trend also that happened. And we did talk about this a lot in these governor's races, right? Where it's like, you know, I don't love the gas prices are going up, but like you're putting up someone that's going to ban abortion at 1 week and maybe make Donald Trump an autocrat. And like, that's just too far for people, right? That's just too far for enough people. And I think that had Republicans, you know, moderated on abortion a bit, particularly in those governor's races, you know, and to keep more of a status quo, I think potentially not, you know, I think that obviously contributed to this. Those two things were working together in the Dems' favor.
So I got a question for both of you on specifically this. Can Republicans moderate on abortion without losing as many voters as they pick up? Because there's a whole big chunk of the Republican base, which... I mean, the reason Republican politicians are taking these positions is because the base demands it of them. And I don't know. Those base voters aren't going to flip to D, but maybe they just don't show up, right? I mean, this is...
You could run on 20-week bans or something. I mean, something in the ballpark, you know, like that is at least palatable to people. You know, you're still going to... They'll still have Dem motivation on that. But I just think that there's this middle voter that we're talking about, this swing voter. Like 1 week bans, no exceptions, 5 week bans, bounties. I mean, that shit is insane for some of them. So I think that you could modulate some.
It is. But on the other hand, there's like, you know, 10%, 30% of the Republican base that wants that.
Maybe, but like just look at DeSantis. DeSantis held the line at a 15-week ban and like he did great. No one's mad at him about it.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. He is sort of a special case because he's the establishment team normal. Great white hope here. I don't know. One thing before we throw to our sponsor. I have seen all of the "this was terrible for Trump" stuff And I can see that certainly. On the other hand, just as a purely analytical matter, Trump does give you something when he's on the ballot. So when Trump is on the ballot, you lose a bunch of suburban educated voters and you gain a bunch of low propensity, low income, low education voters who otherwise don't come out. And that can work out okay for Republicans, especially for Republicans not named Trump, right? This is why they did very well. They outperformed him in 2016 and they outperformed him in 2020. And it's because they got the benefit of being normie Republicans, but they also got all of his voters who he pulled in. When Trump's not on the ballot, you get sort of the counterbalanced version of that. And that's when you get 2018 or 2022, where you're still, Republicans are still repelling those suburbanite voters, but they're not bringing out as many of the deplorables as they need to.
I think that's right. Although I got to say, I actually think one of the successful things that Democrats did or that was done, and part because Trump did it himself, is that, you know, I said like Trump is going to be on the ballot for the people he attracts, but he might not be on the ballot for the people he repels. And so you got to put him on the ballot. And I think that the Mar-a-Lago stuff, I think him, you know, going out and doing rallies in some of these places, like I think Trump let himself and the candidates themselves being very Trumpy. You know, like Dr. Oz had this schizophrenic strategy of like doing, you know, big rallies with Trump, but also hanging out with like Susan Collins and Brian Fitzpatrick. And so people were kind of like, what, you know? And so I think that Trump, yeah, had his, he and the candidates that he pulled across the line. This is where I just want to say one thing about how the focus groups really bore out the swing voters. I kept saying, I don't know, these swing voters, like they're really pissed off at Biden. They talk about the economy, they talk about crime, they talk about inflation. But when you get to vote choice, they're going for the Democrats. And it's because they say the Republican candidate is too extreme, often because of their position on abortion and sort of broadly just like crazy person. That's what happened.
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you hold it, Tim?
Yeah, well, and because it'll make people want to stay through the ads, because I'm going to offer maybe some unfounded jubilation.
Okay.
Like, I'm just going to be a little irrationally optimistic about things on the other side.
All right. So I want to give a big thank you to our sponsor, Boll & Branch. When I climbed into bed last night for my 3.5 hours of sleep, it was a tremendous comfort to wrap myself not only in the warm glow of democracy, but in long staple cotton sheets. From Boll & Branch, which are the best sheets I've ever had. Again, I say this every week, and you guys make fun of me and you roll your eyes at me, but they are both supple and substantial, which is what you want.
Supple is just a weird word. I'm not rolling my eyes at you.
Supple's a weird word, yeah.
It's a great word. Yeah, I have all the best words. I'm like Pete Buttigieg in many ways. Many people are saying.
I'll just say for my part, all we do is just wash them and put them back on. I need to go get us another, because we're not using other sheets anymore.
Because you can't go back, right? Once you've had really, really great sheets, you can't go back. And the stuff Boll & Branch is giving is fantastic. We are into holiday season gift giving. I have already bought many Christmas presents. Boll & Branch makes a great Christmas present for people, because sheets will be weirdly... Nice sheets are something that people tend to be resistant to buy for themselves. You know, they think, oh, that's too extravagant. I can't do that for myself. So they're a great present, you know, because you can rationalize and say, you know what? No, they deserve this. I'm going to give it to them. Once they have it in their lives, they'll never be able to go back, right? You can't go back. You go trying to sleep on what you used to, and it feels like you're on sandpaper.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm preparing my irrational jubilant rant.
All right. Bring home a better night's sleep this holiday season with Boll & Branch bedding. For a limited time, get 20% off your first set of sheets and free shipping when you use promo code NEXTLEVEL at BollAndBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, BOLLAND Branch.com. Promo code NEXTLEVEL. Timothy, go.
Next level. That's the next level. Next level is the code. So here's the thing. We said, all of us people that hate Donald Trump and also care about our democracy, said after January 6th the Republican, that what you just laid out would have been true. There was going to be short-term political pain for throwing Trump overboard, because you're going to lose some of the enthusiasm, some of the thing I've been talking about, the weird Oath Keepers that I saw in Queen Creek the other night, and you'd just lose some of what Trump brought. But there'd be medium to long-term gain, because you don't have to deal with his fucking bullshit anymore, right? And that was the case I made to the remaining normie Republicans that I called, and my friends were still working in the Senate. I was just like, why isn't Tom Cotton doing this? Like, you can end this problem. Like, there'll be a couple of you will go down. Like, there'll be a couple of you that go down, but long-term, it'll be better for the party. They didn't do it. And yeah, I just don't think you can. They missed. The chance is past, okay? This notion that, like, people are just going to move on to Ron DeSantis, and that Donald Trump, what are they imagining? Is Donald Trump going to disappear into a black hole? Is he going to stop?
Well, see, the median Republican voter is going to go race by race and look through and weigh candidate quality and what was gettable. And they're going to say, huh, I believe that Donald J. Trump cost us 1.8 points in the Arizona race. Therefore, I must be for Ron DeSantis. No, look, the guy lost the 2020 election by 7 million votes, and the voters didn't turn away from him because they thought he was a loser. Then they're not going to turn away because a bunch of people at National Review have their panties in a wad. The Republicans did worse than they should have.
There are some, and Sarah, you can talk about this next. There's some in the focus groups, right, who are pragmatic, right, and in the polls, who say that they'll go again. They want somebody who can win. So there are some of those. It's not like there's none of those people. But the other people, the full magus, still exist. They're still going to be there. Donald Trump's still going to be talking to them. He's not going to paint in Midland and disappear. He's not going to move to Brazil and hang out with, you know, Jair Bolsonaro on Elba, okay, for former autocrat Elba. He's still going to be in fucking Florida. He's still going to be on people's TV. He's still going to love attention. He's still going to talk about the secrets that he knows about Ron DeSantis. It's possible that Ron DeSantis could beat him, but Donald Trump is not going quietly into that night, okay? And the voters that I'm seeing here in Arizona, there's a big bunch of them that are going to be with him till the end. And they're going to believe, especially if Lake ends up going down and if those numbers are wrong and she goes down short, they're going to believe that it was stolen again. And he's going to have Carrie Lake out there saying it. And the notion that like they can just turn the page on that now is just folly. It's fantasy. And I think that, like, the thing that cost Republicans this time, like, is going to continue to cost them for a while still. And, like, I think that there's a couple more election cycles of pain ahead over this, because I don't see any path out of it.
Sarah, talk to me about all of the DeSantis 2024 blood in the water, best day of his life. He is now the odds-on favorite to be the Republican nominee. Tell me what your views are on this.
Okay, let me just do a coda to what Tim said here, because it's so important. Here's what Republicans have to deal with going forward. Everybody right now is doing this weird thing. Like, I'm glad that all the Twitterati anti-antes are like, this is Trump's fault and we're ready to move on. Which, by the way, for the last 2 weeks, all of them have been so out in front of themselves on red tsunamis and we're going to destroy and like whatever. happy with all these candidates that, you know, you got perfectly fine. And now they're all like, this is Trump's fault. Rah, rah, rah. People want to move on because look at this election. Okay. Let me just tell you, there are primaries and there are generals. They are different kinds of races. Donald Trump pulled all those crappy candidates across the finish line in the Republican primaries because Republican primary voters want those kinds of candidates. And so the box that Republicans are now in, and this is just from a broad analysis, I'd say this is like the main thing that I come away with from the swing voters is like, they put these crazy candidates up, they're poison to swing voters. Bing, bang, boom. Like, that is what happened in 2020 with Trump. It's what's happening right now. And so they've got a problem. They're boxed in on this. And the idea, and so this is where we get to DeSantis. So I wrote a long thread yesterday about, which I thought maybe you might be mad at me, JBL, because I didn't write it for the Bulwark. I just, like, you know, just ranked it out on Twitter. I'm sorry. But I got all annoyed at all these people who were acting like, you know, Ron DeSantis, it's obviously going to be Ron DeSantis. And the fact is, and there were a bunch of people sort of tweeting this about, oh, you know, anecdotal evidence. Like Tim Alberto was like standing in line asking people, and a bunch of Republicans were saying, I don't want Trump to run. I want DeSantis. Okay.
He was in suburban Atlanta. No shit.
Right. Yeah, no, that's right. As you guys have heard me say many, many times, number one name that comes up in the focus groups is Ron DeSantis. And after Trump, if you say, if Trump doesn't run, who do you want? They say Ron DeSantis. And there are many people who will say, I don't want Trump to run. Like, we're ready to move on to these other new stars. They want DeSantis. That is a chunk of the party. It is available to them, potentially, to a candidate who can harness it. My question is, these guys all think that Ron DeSantis is the God's gift to politics. And what I want to know is, I have seen no evidence that Ron DeSantis is the kind of politician who can stand toe-to-toe with Donald Trump in an arena while he has rally after rally where he clowns DeSantis, where he has his crazy Oathkeeper supporters menacing DeSantis, where all of these election deniers that Trump did help pull, that Trump endorsed, who were all in safe places, so they all now have won, not in the swing states, but out in safe seats, who all love Trump and all ran in Trump's image. Like, I don't think these guys have an accurate sense of the base. This was always the case. Trump owns the base, and the base is sufficiently large to win Republican primaries.
Well, so the base is Trumpier because Trump drove out a bunch of those marginal R voters.
That's right.
Who are now either not Republican voters or are swing voters. And so the base is Trumpier precisely because Trump has failed, right? I mean, this is, it's a vicious cycle, not a virtuous cycle.
Yeah, and can I throw one other thing out there? Let's say that their wet dream comes true and that Ron DeSantis is up for it and that he does squeak out a victory with Donald Trump, or even not even squeak out. Maybe he wins. Let's just do their porn. Let's say Ron DeSantis 69, Donald Trump 31. Okay? Let's say that happens. What do you think is happening with that 31? You know, you think that 31 is all getting on board?
They'll just be loyal soldiers.
All of them. Some of them will. Do you think? What do you think is happening to Donald Trump? You think he's going to go be the warm up act at the DeSantis convention?
Oh yeah,
in 2024.
He'll just be a good shoulder. He'll know that he's been beaten.
Yeah, go talk about his pal Ron and talk about how he's going to go out there and get people to go vote. And do we think Ron in that primary is going to be able to appeal to the Brian Kemp, Mike DeWine, Chris Sununu voter while he's running a primary against Donald Trump? Or is he going to have to try to beat Donald Trump by going crazier on how we should prosecute Fauci harder and build a bigger fucking wall? Like, what do you think Ron DeSantis is going to look like? If you looked at last night and thought, oh man, I think what America is looking for is to Floridify America. I think what America wants is don't say gay and trolling Disney over a lesbian kiss and, like, you know, yelling at reporters and whatever, all the things people like about Ron DeSantis. I think you're on drugs. The types of Republicans that did well in the rest of America, north of DeSantis, Stan, were the, like, much more mild-mannered ones. You know, the ones who were much more technocratic. Like, those are the ones that really performed well when you're looking at the swing states, which Florida is not anymore. So I just... You know, maybe we're sniffing our own glue this morning and we're on a high post-midterm high. But I think that fantasy is like something that looks real good at two tweet lengths. You know, if you're an anti-anti, and like when you start to game it out, like, starts to get pretty damn ugly.
And this is, you guys are more on Twitter than I am. Roughly, if you had to estimate the number, how many anti-anti Republican and conservative types did you see last night saying Brian Kemp should challenge Trump? Because Kemp...
Mike DeWine.
So
Mike, it's Mike DeWine's moment.
I'm sorry. Ron DeSantis ran against a tomato can of an opponent in a state which has been trending ever more Republican for like four cycles. And Brian Kemp went in a purple state against a very high-quality opponent and beat her pretty soundly. And yet, all of the anti-antis, there's crickets on the, you know, and that shows you that DeSantis isn't an argument. DeSantis is a talisman. The idea of DeSantis 2024 is something that people who don't want to come to terms with the reality of Trumpism just hold on to and fetishize over it, right? They just rub it. And I hate that, and I find it so despicable.
Yeah. And well, here's the other thing about it, being a talisman. It also It's a strategic, it's like a three, it's their own little 5D chess, because they think that they can get the MAGA voters with DeSantis without having to do the whole deal, you know, right. without having to do the dance, the striptease, right? They don't think they can get them with Kemp. So it's a strategic move, right? Like, that's what they think they're doing. Because if it was legitimate, you would think that, you know, you don't see on the New York Post cover, for example, today, like, the future, DeSantis v. Whitmer. Right. Like, if this was actual analysis, which is right, which is like both parties need to move on. We need to look at who had the strongest night in 2022, you know, for the next generation. Like, that's what they'd be saying. And to the same, you know, how what percentage of the people on Twitter said Brian Kemp and who are talking about Gretchen Whitmer 2024? The same percentage, zero. Right. Because it's not fucking actual analysis. It's wish casting and a little strategic ploy.
Can I ask you guys quickly, just I don't want to spend a little bit of this, about Wes Moore in Maryland, who ran a pretty impressive campaign, got a pretty impressive win, flipping another governor's seat, and it seems like an awfully impressive guy. Am I wrong to think that this guy could have a future nationally?
I think that the Dem bench issues are a little bit, I'll let Sarah talk about her favorite Abigail Spanberger, who I was with, 2 days ago. I know that my content has all been Arizona focused, but I was in Washington for Patty Murray, Tiffany Smiley, Arizona, Virginia for Spanberger, Pennsylvania for Oz. The Oz people were pretty bullish on Monday night. Let me tell you, pretty bullish at the Oz rally. tough titties. There are some other, I think Spanberger is a Virginia governor, maybe, right? When that opens back up, there are others. But on Wes, you know, he's really good. He's really talented. Me and Jim did that profile of him, Jim Swift, and I was on the phone with him for a long time, just saying like, he has the skills. He has a great life story. Third elected black governor in America, in American history. I didn't realize it was that few. I mean, it's another part of the awakening. Only three elected black governors. There've been a couple that were lieutenant governor and ascended, and he's really good. He has a little bit of a weird thing, which I mentioned in Decision Dex, is projecting a runoff in Georgia that's coming across. There's a little bit of weirdness with his book. Like, he's got a little bit of like a exaggeration, you know, kind of his, you know, some of his little habit, a politician's habit to gild the lily a little bit. But you know who else had that habit? Joe Biden. He got it under control after a while and became the president. So, you know, that's
I feel like Donald Trump may have done some exaggerating.
Trump has he?
It's hard to say.
Okay, well, so we've had two exaggerators, a small one and a big one recently as president. So
maybe Bill Clinton might have done that once or twice. It's, you know, who can say?
So anyway, that would be my only flag about Wes Moore. But besides that, the dude is awesome. And I do think that these wins were important for Democrats. And the Whitmer thing, I think, is real, just as far as kind of, it might not solve their short-term problem, which is a very old president and kind of a VP that's in it. But as a medium term, it helped. You have to win these races to have a bench.
And this is something I really feel like we have been talking about that has come to fruition, which is that 2022 had the ability to create a new generation of Democratic stars. And we got Whitmer, we got Wes Moore, we got Josh Shapiro, who just dominated and I think has been really impressive. I mean, you get a governor that popular with a good background on crime as attorney general, who is popular in a swing state like Pennsylvania, that's a must win for Democrats. Ooh, boy. And, you know, look, I get annoyed at Democrats for their identity politics, blah, blah, blah. But like, you got a Jewish guy from Pennsylvania, you got a woman in Michigan, you got a black guy in Maryland. And I'm looking at this crowd and I'm like, that is promising. That is a really talented bench. They're getting somewhere. And it makes me feel better about, and Abigail Spanberger. Did she talk about me, Tim, when you were with her? Did she mention me?
I mean, the Republicans can say basically the same thing. We got Carrie Lake in Arizona and Herschel Walker in Georgia.
That's right.
But the Democrats needed it, though. You know, there was a gap in need. Abigail didn't mention you, but she's probably listening. I said hello. Big bulwark person. Had things gone poorly, which I did not think that they were going to, but I joked that like she might want to, you know, be the new chairman emeritus or something at the bulwark. But she did. She is a reader. I guess I'll say that. She's reading our content. And a great American.
Okay, but so she didn't say hi to Sarah.
She didn't particularly say Sarah Longwell, I love her so much. She's the best person
in the
world.
I don't understand why you couldn't just lie to me on this front. Like, you could have just made it up. You okay. didn't have to tell me the
Sorry,
truth.
Sorry, okay. my brain's moving slow. I would have.
But I'm super... Listen, last night, this was... Last night really was... you guys remember 2020 and how the expectations were so different. And we were, like, pretty depressed on election night. But last night... You know, I was waiting for those Wexton results to come in because that was the high going to be their high watermark. If because they got this guy Hung Cao who is in sort of Southern Virginia or mid Virginia, who was really talented, like a really good Republican, but he was running against a Democrat, Jennifer Wexton, who's fine. But that would have been like big wave, even like right. looking at tsunami. And so when she won against him. Because he was like not an election denier at all. He's actually quite an attractive candidate for the Republicans. Then I was just like living on Spanberger, like checking because that was the tsunami was Wexton into my veins. the tsunami was Wexton. The wave-ish was going to be if they got Spanberger and they didn't. And she has a bright political future. She is very tall. For people who don't know her, and I've been told as a short person that it's quite important to be tall for politics.
How tall is Alyssa Slotkin? That's another winner in the Sarah Longwell oof.
Alyssa Slotkin, oh man, I mean, yeah, my 2018 girls, they really came through. I'm so thrilled because that should be the future.
I mean, I don't want to crush you, but after your Lisa Stefanik experience, maybe slow your roll on giving your heart away.
That's fine. That's fine.
But these politicians will break your heart. Tim, you had something for Sarah. You wanted to ask her about Georgia.
So on last Friday night, before I left on my whirlwind tour of America to go to all these campaign events, I said...
Real America.
To Real America. I said to my husband, so here's the thing. LSU plays Alabama tomorrow. We haven't beat Alabama in like 12 years. We've beat them one time in the last 12 years. It's very unlikely that this happens. But if LSU beats Alabama, they will likely be going to the SEC championship in Atlanta, which is held 3 days before the Georgia runoff. And so I said, if this unique chain of events happens where LSU beats Alabama and Georgia goes to a runoff, I am going to work Longwell and get dispatched to Georgia. For somebody, I don't know, for something, for the bulwark or for, I don't know, whatever. I don't know, do a focus group or you can come up with the assignment. I don't know. But I will be there on the ground in Georgia for the runoff. So you don't have to promise anything right now. But I just want to throw that out there that very unlikely series of events has occurred. And it seems silly for me not to be in Georgia right there for the SEC championship and this runoff. That could decide the Senate. Who knows?
Sure. Can we just we'll table that one and talk about that. But let's talk about Georgia proper. This so
we're tabling it. Wow, the listeners noticed. That was a very fast table. Okay, so FYI, I guess I'll be there on my own time. I'm there on my own time. So if you are Atlanta listeners want to contribute, if Sarah doesn't want to do so, I might stay at your guest room or something.
JVL gives the assignments. I just publish. Yeah, that's right. I just find the money for your junkets. here's the thing about the Georgia runoff that I want to talk about. Right. So while we've been on, Decision Desk calls it for runoff, but Warnock has been up over Walker. Okay, he wasn't going to cross the 50% threshold, but last time before I came down here, he was at like 49.2. And he was maybe running a point ahead of Walker, but the Libertarian in the race had shaved 2 points out that you gotta assume is coming from Walker, I think. And so this is going to go to a runoff. And we've been talking about like what the dynamics of that runoff are going to be. I have been like, and I've never quite had the answer for this. Cause for me, it's always, there's been two big things. One is how big is Kemp's tail? Right. And so Kemp has a big tail, big, big win last night over Stacey Abrams. Okay. 49.4. That's pretty good for Warnock. And then, so that's one thing that's now they're not going to have the Kemp turnout machine, right?
It's better than he was, especially look, I think that's better than what was Warnock in 2020 in the first round. I don't think he was at 49.
Was there a Libertarian? Do you remember?
Yeah, in both, I think. And Purdue, Purdue had Ossoff, but Purdue was like at like 49.8. or something, right? And and I forget what the Warnock first round was.
So there's that element, and then you take the Libertarian out for the runoff. But the question is is Georgia going to determine control of the Senate? Because if Georgia is not going to determine control of the Senate. And this is, I guess, a question for you guys that I've been trying to think through. Do they play blood sport for it, or do they just let Walker go because he's going to humiliate them as a senator anyway?
I mean, I think they got to play blood sport no matter what.
I think they do too. I think that they do too, but I just think it's a little bit harder to juice the enthusiasm, I guess, is what I'm going to say. So the Republicans play blood sport no matter what, like the strategists that don't. But like, if you're trying to squeeze a couple extra million out of some depressed donors, that might be a little harder, right? I think that if you are the nose-holding Walker voter, which there was some, you know, it's like, am I really going to go out again in December to vote for this asshole that I didn't even like if it doesn't matter, right? Like, it's a lot easier to convince the nose-holding Walker voter to go if it's like, you're not really going out for Walker, you're going out for Mitch and for tax cuts and whatever, you know? I do think that there'll be an enthusiasm issue for Herschel. And then, by the way, circling back to our second topic, Donald Trump, not dead.
Nope.
Not disappeared. Not painting in Midland. Still alive. So, like, what's he going to do? Is he going to go there and scare the Georgia Red Dogs away again, just like he did last time? Is he going to not go? And there'll be drama around that where some of the people in MTG's district don't show up. I think that all of that is possible. And so I do think that it's a much better situation for Republicans as far as unity is concerned and momentum if it's a Senate deciding thing. And for the Democrats, just really quickly, the Democrats, this is worth mentioning as we think long-term, as we all start to, you know, get bullish on things. The 24 map is really bad for Democrats compared to this year's map.
Really bad. Terrible.
And so, like,
really bad.
If the Democrats are at 51, if they do hold on here with Kelly and Masto, it's actually an important seat for the Democrats. I mean, A, because fuck Herschel Walker and you don't want this asshole in the Senate, but B, it adds a little bit of cushion for going forward when you've got all these red state, you know, Sherrod Brown and Manchin and Tester who have to defend themselves. So I think that's a real thing as far as an enthusiasm gap based on the stakes.
Yep. All right, listen, before we get out of here, we've been much too upbeat for my comfort level. And I would like to remind both of you and viewers that J.D. Vance is going to become a United States Senator. J.D. Vance. He did it. He got away with it. He beat Josh Mandel by like 5 votes in the primary and only because Donald Trump pulled him across the line. He then beat a actual real Ohioan who, you know, ran a great campaign against him. J.D. Vance himself sort of barely tried. And then last night in his victory speech, name checked, I think, 34 different people that he thanked, none of whose name was Trump. He's Rollo Tomasi. He's the guy who got away with it. And I don't know about you, but I find it hard to enjoy anything in life knowing that there are guys like J.D. Vance out there getting away with it. Thoughts?
But can I put an optimistic spin on that? Optimistic spin. So J.D. Vance is a craven pugilist, and I loathe him. However, the J.D. Vance that we saw 3 years ago was like pretty normal guy. In fact, he was one of us. That guy's in there. It's probably his true self. Like the guy that he's been cosplaying the Trumper. And I think that as far as having like really, my guess is he goes to the Senate. And he acts pretty normal.
No. I don't.
You think that J.D. Vance becomes the Marjorie Taylor Greene of the
Senate?
No,
not Marjorie Taylor Greene. But I think that he thinks that he has a unique brand as whatever, the smart populist, right, you know, who could offer this deal. And I do. And I think that he has gained a deep well of resentment for the elites that shunned him after he was praised by them vociferously, so it's unclear to me why that bothers him so much, that I think that he does not like that they've turned on him. And I think that he does. I think that he's going to, you know, do the we shouldn't fund Ukraine and the whole deal. I don't know that he's going full Marjorie Taylor Greene, but I think that he'll be a pain in the ass.
Yeah. You know what, though? The thing is, like, there's just like a crowd of boys like that now in the Senate, right? You've already got that's what Hawley is. That's sort of what Cruz is. And like
J.D. thinks he's running for president. Not this cycle, but he thinks he's running for president at some point.
Oh.
As sure as I am sitting here, you pencil him in for 2020.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
100%.
Well, I'm just happy. I'm turning it back to a happy note. that if this podcast had aired last week, JVL would have caveated his 2028 presidential prediction by saying, if we still have a democracy in 2028. So even dark JVL, there's a little bit of light and optimism in there, you know, that the fact that you feel like we're going to make it to 2028 now.
We're going to make it.
Yeah, but JVL, it's also on some of your analysis, you know, and we can talk more about this on Friday from the Secret Pod. But like, you know, I think that one of the open questions really was how much people were going to go with the economy. And, you know, you had started to kind of towards the end be like, yeah, the fundamentals reasserting themselves or whatever. But prior to that, you'd kind of been like, I don't know that you mostly wanted to fire people into the sun for caring about this. But like, you also thought maybe it wasn't going to be like a thing that dominated people as much. And I think it turned out, I hear a bunch of, by the way, this idea that abortion is an economic issue. People should just stop with that. That is not a thing. But the idea that people were willing to think about democracy / go against these extremist candidates, like, and the economy didn't, I mean, it just didn't sweep Republicans in. That's pretty consistent with where you were.
JVL yeah. was right. Where's your JVL was right t-shirt? You this whole time you mocked me and Sarah, and you're like, you guys care about gas prices, and the gas prices aren't that bad. And we're like, what are you talking about? They are bad. And you're like, well, in comparison, they're not that bad. It's not a big of a deal. And the people did what you wanted. The people did what you wanted. They're like, yeah, I'm going to eat this extra buck on the gas pump and deal with that, because a lot of crazy shit's happening out there in the world and I don't want these lunatics in charge.
So I want to have like a real deep discussion on this at some point, not today, but I want to just put this as a bee in your bonnet. I think that the right track, wrong track numbers in America are basically broken as an indicator. Right track, wrong track used to be a really important political indicator. And I think we've been sort of heavy wrong track now for something like 16 of the last 18 years when you look at it. If I was going to guess, and again, I'm just sort of putting this forward as a thesis, I'm not prepared to defend it. What's going on is that the hyperpolarization has made it like the poll where like 75% of America thinks that democracy is in peril. And like on the top line, you're like, oh, that's good. People understand what's going on. And then when you look into the numbers, you realize, oh, no, the people who want to like overthrow democracy think the democracy is in peril. I think that's what's happened with right track, wrong track, where it's the polarization has made it so that no matter what's happening, you're going to have the vast majority of the country saying we're on the wrong track because of negative and partisanship and other stuff that's going on in terms of how we view the world.
Well, yeah, because you have a baseline 45. Negative.
Right.
Right. Like you're starting at 45 negative, no matter who you are. Like it's just as long as you have unless you like are a non-political person, unless it's, you know, like the we're right track, wrong track is starting at 45. Well, you're not going to be non-political because it's about the president. You're starting at 45 immediately. And so then any issues on your own side.
But also people look at it and like, you know, so if you're a Democrat, right, you can look at America and say wrong track. Not because of anything that's going on, but because of not because of Joe Biden even, but because of like, well, look at what the Republican, you know, everything's terrible, right? They're trying to, they've overturned Dobbs. I just think that the 50-50 country, a deeply polarized 50-50 country means that no matter what's going on and who's in charge, basically everybody's unhappy most of the time.
Yeah, so I agree with this, except we should dig into this because I'm not sure it's the polarization is quite telling the story. I think you're right because I think part of it is right. Now both sides view the other side as an existential threat. And so that gives you not just wrong track, but like really bad wrong track. Like the other side's in charge. You are catastrophizing. I think the question is like, why does it just like sit in the 70s? I was doing a thing on, I did an hour on WNYC the other day, and I was talking about how sad I was like, there's nobody sadder than these swing voters right now. Like when you listen to them, you know, and he was like, well, what about, you know, last cycle? Were they happier last cycle? And I was like, oh no, they were so depressed about COVID or whatever. And he's like, well, what about before that? And I was like, well, I was really talking to Trump voters who were dissatisfied with Trump. So they hated. And I was like, you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, no one's ever been happy. Now, granted, I'm looking for persuadables. So I think I'm talking to the unhappiest people, but there is something to be said for, we may just be in a mindset in this country where we have lost that sense of a positive future, and it's creating a much more negative perspective on future outlooks.
Yeah.
That's the subject of a 7,000 word piece. All right, listen, we got to go. Great show. Guys, listen, hit the subscribe button. Follow us along. Go to thebulwark.com. Sign up for all the great stuff we're doing over there. We got Charlie Sykes' morning newsletter every morning for free. We got great pieces put out by smart people like Sarah and Tim with no ads or anything. You just get it. Get all that stuff for free at thebulwark.com. Thanks a lot. We will
follow
be back
us on our socials and get our comments. I'm stuck in Maricopa County the rest of the week still.
You know? You have nothing to do.
I'm going to keep you posted. I'll be doing little dispatches on the board.
All right. Guys, we will see you again next week. Bye.
Bye.